You're listening to a podcast by Drift, the Dutch Research Institute for Transitions. In this show, Wouter Mulders is joined by colleagues to interview theoretical and practical experts on fundamental change. Because by understanding transitions to just and sustainable societies, we can accelerate them. At least we hope so.
So can you tell us something about this dune that we're climbing now?
This is the highest dune of the Netherlands.
How high is the highest?
The highest dune is 55.4 meters. So it's really big.
Seems pretty high, yes.
You're hearing that right. Our podcast team is starting this episode by climbing a giant staircase. As always, my name is Wouter Mulders. And the other voices that you're hearing are Mara de Pater, a transitions researcher specializing in biodiversity. She's asking questions. And Samuele van Deutekom, a forest ranger. And it's not just any giant staircase that we're climbing. We've come out to the dunes of Schorl, a coastal area an hour's drive north of Amsterdam. It's the perfect place for what we want to discuss today. Why biodiversity is such a treasure, and what we can do to foster more biodiversity. Because what better way to do that than to walk in and talk about an area that itself is a treasure chamber full of different landscape types and ecosystems. There's pine forests, forests with other types of trees, sand dunes, beaches, and also heaths, which we're wrongfully calling heather. That's my mistake. In this episode, we're diving into the unique history and makeup of these dunes. And then we touch on something you may already be familiar with, that biodiversity is in crisis, and why that should concern all of us. And once we've established that, Mara and Samuel discuss a powerful idea. What if changing the way we view nature, and what qualifies as nature, could help us turn the tide in this crisis and benefit all of us as well in unforeseen ways? You'll hear all about it in this episode. But first, back to our staircase climb.
And whenever I picture a dune, it's mostly like sandy and some grassy species growing on it. But this is quite foresty.
Yeah.
Did you see that more here? Do you also have the more sandy dunes?
Yeah. So then you have to go to sea. Mm-hmm. It's like 5 kilometers from here. Okay. So over there is really the well-known dunes with sand and the grass. And then you get heide. You get
heather.
Heather, thank you. And then you get the forest. Mm-hmm. So it's a gradient from pretty open to more close.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different landscape types very close to one another.
Yeah, a lot of different ecosystems combined.
Okay. I think we're halfway with the stairs, or maybe I'm optimistic.
A little bit optimistic.
Oh yeah.
Steeper from here.
It's a bit of a climb.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, let's go.
Before we continue, a quick word about the wind. Have you ever heard of the phrase, "It's a feature, not a bug"? It's often used as a joke among computer programmers. What if an obvious error in the coding, a bug, could actually be considered a desirable extra, a feature? And there are real-life examples of this. Think of the sticky notes you can find in any office environment. At first, the weak glue invented by scientist Spencer Silver was a failure, a bug. But on a sticky note, it became an extremely handy feature. You're listening to a special bonus episode of this podcast, produced together with the EU project BioNext. This episode also has a bug, and that is the sound of wind. See, we at Drift thought it would be a great idea to record an episode about fundamental change for biodiversity in a very biodiverse ecosystem. But the thing is, the area we picked is quite windy, and it's impossible to fully scrub the sound of wind from the audio recording. But what if we think of the wind as a feature, as an added bonus? Its rustling sound may help to transport you to that cold June where we recorded this on a wonderful April morning. And because some segments we recorded are unlistenable, we had to get creative and add more voiceovers like this one. So think of the wind as a feature and not a bug. Now, once we reach the top of the stairs, we stop to observe the area. We're slightly out of breath, and Samuel happily notices that it's a clear enough day to see the North Sea.
You can even see her.
Yeah.
Good.
You can see all across the dune area here, and then see the North Sea.
Yeah.
Some offshore windmills.
And you can see over there, the landscape is way more open.
Yes.
You see the sand, the grass.
Yeah, it's very different out
still
there.
Forest.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that we're here with you, Samuel, because you can give us a lot of practical ideas and insights as well. First of all, happy to be here.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I introduced you as our guest, but maybe we're your guest because we are in your area. Yeah, I'm making air quotes here. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and about where we are?
Well, like you always said, I'm Samuela. I am a forester for Stas Bosbeheer.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in the school of Sedona, the highest dunes of the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And it's a really beautiful area, in Nature 2000 area, with a lot of special species.
Yeah. And what makes the area so unique or so different from a regular dune area?
Well, what makes it really special is it's really big. Mm-hmm. It's like 1,800 hectares. And the soil is really different.
Okay.
It is deficient on lime.
Yeah.
And the really and that makes it for certain species really difficult to grow, but also gave the opportunity to other species to do grow.
Yeah, so it has different species normally because of a different type of soil.
Yes.
And we just climbed a giant staircase.
It's really big.
Yeah, so we're also very high up here.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
The soil we're standing on contains little lime, so it's more acidic. And that might make it harder for some species to grow, but as long as the area doesn't become a dense forest, the soil can produce a huge diversity of plant, moss, and animal species. And to drive this point home, Samuel asks us to kneel and to really zoom in on a small area.
Yeah,
we're different species on a really small area.
Oh, yeah.
We just had a little strip of sand, and now we're looking at a tiny patch, and there's a little moss.
Yeah.
So the variation in landscape that you described, like having open dunes and having forest and thinner forest, it also applies to a very small scale.
Yeah.
Even on a meters,
yeah,
you want to have a variation.
And that makes it so unique because the soil is so arm. The soil is so
lacking nutrients mm-hmm.
that it makes it possible for those species to grow over here.
These are like pioneer species. They're the first who get it and the first who try it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really unique. The amount of species you get in this small area, that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
But you have to get on your knees to see it and then take a look.
I really like these small yellow thingies.
Yeah, that carries the seeds.
Oh.
So it's part of the moss.
Yes.
It almost looks like a little flower field. Like we're in a tiny North Holland tulip field, but then 10 times as small.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. We're standing up again. Now we would like to know a little more about how this area is doing. So, Samuel, how healthy is this area?
And how do you look at the health of this area? And maybe also, how are you trying to restore it, protect it?
Well, that's a really big question.
Yeah.
Well, it could be doing better. Mm-hmm. It needs a little bit of help.
Yeah.
Because it's not as healthy as it should be. So we do a lot of work, for example, by trying to fight the invasive exotic species,
mm-hmm.
to take them out of the system. And we try to create more variation in mm-hmm. the area.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the trees, we have a lot of pine trees.
Yeah.
And that are also exotic species.
Yeah. How did those pine trees get here?
They were planted because a long time ago everything was just sand.
Mm-hmm.
And the sand was taken up by the wind and blown everywhere. It was getting on the villages. They didn't like it. So they were trying to put the sand down.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to plant. So they tried many different species. For example, the pine trees did really well. So
yeah.
They planted a lot of pine trees to put the sand down and okay. also for the wood production.
Yeah. Okay. So it used to be sand blowing everywhere,
yeah.
Put in exotic species, the pine trees, but actually the pine trees kept it down. So I imagine that this used to be an area filled with pine trees, but now it's kind of open in many places also that yeah. you showed us.
Yeah, well, that's because of we had a lot of fires in the area.
Mm-hmm.
In 2009, 10 and 11, there were a few big fires. So a lot of the trees were burned down, and pine trees burn really easily because of the oil that's inside it. They will burn really fast. And the pine tree...
the stem?
The seeds. The
okay, cones,
The cones, they will, if they get on fire, they will be thrown away. So they...
So like a little grenade. Yeah.
And like little grenades, they will fly everywhere. So
oh, Lord.
New fires in new places. So
yeah.
if it starts burning here, it can go really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of, a big part of the forest was burned down.
Yeah.
That's more than 10 years ago. And now you see how the nature evolves in a new situation. So you see new species growing. There's room for the mosses, for heather. So more for species that belong here.
Yeah. So actually, what sounds like a disaster was kind of good news, in a sense, for the nature here.
Well, a forest fire isn't part of a nature cycle, mm-hmm. because everything, every area will grow towards a forest.
Yeah.
And then the forest have to be taken down to give new species. Yeah, so it's a part of the big cycle. But for the people living around this area, it's
yeah.
really scary.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a disaster in that way. It was really scary for people.
Mm-hmm.
But the nature is fine.
Yeah.
Nature will find its way.
And how's it doing now? And how is it going into the future, maybe? You have this diverse terrain. It's open. There's still trees. There are more native trees now, or you're trying to bring in more native trees. What are the plans, maybe, for Schorl?
One important part we want to do is turn the place with only pine trees to a more mixed
mm-hmm.
area. And also the open areas we want to keep open because the pine trees, the seeds are still getting in the open area, so new pine trees are still growing, so we are taking them out. And also other invasive species are really growing really fast. So it's working to keep it open and to keep it healthy.
Yeah. Okay.
That strikes me as a great example of the things that nature can do for us. Pine trees were once planted here to stop the sand from blowing everywhere, and that was making life very uncomfortable for those living around the area. Here's where we turn to Mare de Pater, a transitions researcher at Drift, whom you've already heard in the background. We recorded this part of the interview afterwards because the wind was too strong when I interviewed her in the dunes. Mare, what sort of work do you do for Drift?
I work at Drift as a researcher and advisor, mostly on the topic of biodiversity transitions, meaning that I look at changes in society for or by nature and biodiversity.
Yeah, so nature is changing, but also we are changing for nature or because of nature.
Yes. How I see it is that there's a biodiversity crisis, so nature is not doing well, and there are several things in our society that are impacting biodiversity, mostly in a negative way, that we have to change. But on the other hand, our ecosystems or our nature is also changing, which impacts how we live.
Yeah, mostly in a negative way, but ultimately it could also be in a positive way. Like,
definitely, yes,
yeah.
yes.
And that would benefit us in other ways.
For sure, yeah. If nature is thriving, I would say that societies can be thriving more than they are right now.
Okay. That's great. you talked about biodiversity crisis. Zooming in, what is biodiversity and how is it in crisis? Maybe people know already, but maybe good to hear it from you.
Yeah, I think a very simple way to approach biodiversity is the amount of different species. So that's plants, animals, but also more microorganisms. But I would say that's a bit too simple. It's not just the amount of different species. It's also the total mass, so the biomass of these species, how these species relate to each other in ecosystems and their experience. So maybe that's it.
Okay. So it's not just counting, here's beetle A, here's beetle B, here's plant A, here's plant B, but it's also how many of them there are and how well they're doing.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so you talk about the fact that biodiversity is in crisis. How come? How is that?
So ecosystems which support biodiversity are negatively impacted, which means that we're losing certain species. And as all of these species in ecosystems are dependent on each other, it's kind of a negative cycle in which we keep losing certain species, or the population of these species is getting smaller and smaller, or less and less healthy.
Yeah, and this is asking for an obvious answer, but why? Like, how is that happening?
It's mostly a lot of negative influences over or coming from human activities. So think about certain emissions that are impacting the environment, or very simply just taking away land that used to be nature and using it for infrastructure, agriculture, cities, stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, that does sound familiar. And why, also an open door maybe, but why is biodiversity so valuable and why is it so alarming that we're losing it? Like, what's going to happen if we lose more biodiversity?
Yeah, so having a rich biodiversity and healthy ecosystems basically sustain the entire Earth. So having that changed also changes our living environment all over the world. Mm-hmm. And then more locally, there's a lot of things in the ecosystem that we're dependent on for our health, for our food, and more directly for recreation, mental health, stuff like that.
Okay, now we're going back to the dunes, and we're looking for a local example. What does nature give to us?
Yes, well, of course, it's beautiful. It's good for your health to be outside. It's proven that if there's a tree outside your hospital window, you will get better sooner. And also for the dunes, it's of course the drinking water. The dunes will filter the rainwater, so it's easier to make it accessible as clean drinking water, so we don't have to put the chlorine in it.
Yeah.
So that are things that are really helpful.
So we're standing on a giant natural filtration system.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But the risky thing is that in the Netherlands we are really often see it really separated. Like, this is nature, and you can only look at it. And this is nature, and this is here you guys can walk with your dog and run and have fun. Mm-hmm. And this is nature, and here we cut down trees and we use it for building and stuff like that. And for a lot of people, this area is their backyard, and we shouldn't cut down trees here. But somewhere else, that's okay. So we also have to find a way to mix those things a little bit more. And of course, certain areas to say, okay, protection is the most important thing in this room, do a little bit less of the production and a little bit less of the recreation. But in many new areas that we are creating, and we are creating new nature, you should look if you can combine those things.
Mara, what do you think about that strict separation between those goals that we may have in nature?
Yeah, I think I recognize it, but coming a bit more from like a societal perspective, what I often see is that there is a separation between nature and not nature.
Yeah.
So for example, agricultural areas or cities, they're not nature. And this area is nature. And it's a very harsh distinction between those two. And interestingly, on a lot of more ecological farms, there's much more biodiversity than in some areas that have this label of nature,
yeah.
Or even in cities, like city parks can be super biodiverse and very rich in species. So I think we should make it even broader, like do not distinguish between different types of nature, but also between
nature
and not nature.
Yeah, yes.
It's a bit more of a gradient.
Yeah. Because what is nature? That's a really difficult question.
Yeah, and the separation between humans and nature is also very strong.
Yeah.
I think, especially in Western Europe, especially in the Netherlands, people tend to see nature as something external to them that they can manage, control, or that's very pristine, or bothering them even. Mm-hmm. And don't realize that our societies and nature are very entangled and dependent on each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's really true. Yeah. And I think that's something we have to work on, like, how can we also make a connection, like a physical connection, between the real nature areas we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And the cities, like, what can we make in between that's also green? Mm. I don't know if you have to call nature or not, but that also can help with the need of being outside, being in some green place that's good for your health, where you can move, where you can exercise, where you can find peace and quiet. And then it doesn't have to be as protected as this area, but if we create more of those spots, then it will be easier for people to reach it.
Hmm.
And also we'll take the pressure of those areas.
Yeah.
Because now people will get in the car and drive an hour to get into nature.
Yeah.
It should be just around the corner for everyone.
And do you think that's also beneficial for biodiversity, if there's more of these transitional zones?
Yes. In two different ways. Of course, if you have these zones can also be used for animals and plants to spread or to move. And also because pressure will be taken down, because recreation has its influence on nature.
Yeah.
So if we can spread it more, then it will be, I think, better for your biodiversity.
Yeah.
That's an excellent plan.
It may have taken us a long and windy walk, but here I think we finally arrive at the fundamental change that both Mara and Samuel want. It's evident from the history of school that nature can support us in so many ways. Trees provided lumber, and it protected nearby residents from the rough blowing sand. The beautiful and diverse environment that's here now allows us to recharge, to heal and learn. And on a bigger scale, ecosystems like these filter our water, protect us against the sea, and it benefits us in hundreds of other ways. But what if we stopped putting all our eggs in this one basket? Now we mostly expect these benefits from pieces of nature that are clearly recognizable, like forests or national parks. It's where we go on a Sunday afternoon with strict expectations and a clear idea of what goes where. By doing this, we're selling ourselves short, because there are countless farms and squares and parks that we encounter every day that could do the same thing for us. So what if we blurred the distinctions between this is nature and this isn't? And not to lay more claim on areas like the dunes of Schorl, but because it allows us to create and discover other green places that can help protect us and where we can recharge and heal and learn. So we create more transitional zones, like forest ranger Samuel called them, bridging the gap between the grey and brown of our cities and villages and the dark green of our forests and national parks. These would then in turn help us in the biodiversity and climate crisis. And that's not just a job for nature organizations. It's up to governments, city planners, farmers, hospitals, schools, neighborhoods, and many others to do this. And it will require them to fundamentally change their ways. It's on all of us. That was our podcast for today. In May 2024, Mara and other Drift colleagues are returning to this area to work with a wide group of biodiversity researchers and practitioners on these futures for nature. We're saying futures because there's more than one way to go about this. If you're part of that group and listening to this podcast now, we wish you a wonderful and productive time. And if this podcast inspired you to learn more about the new nature of the future, have a look at the Bionext project at bionext-project.eu. There you can find more background and inspiration. Thanks to Bionext for making this podcast possible.
This podcast is produced by Drift, the Dutch Research Institute for Transitions. Make sure to subscribe to us in your favorite podcast app. And for more transition know-how and how-to, please go to drift.eur.nl.